Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Planestalkers Podcast, the show by casuals for casuals. And I am your host, Will Benson, joined as always by my soon-to-be winning the SG Open in Syracuse, Aramis Perez. Aramis Perez, how are you tonight, sir?
Thanks for the jinx.
Well, that's, you know, since I can't go, I got to find some way to stop it.
Well, you know, hey, if I end up on Twitch, you can watch me on there.
Hey, if you end up on Twitch, I will watch you. We'll be posting it.
That should be a good sign if I am on Twitch. That means I'm probably having a pretty good day at this point.
Right. So we're very excited about that. I mean, it's an exciting time. I mean, so let's just get, you know. Untap a keeping draw. All right, so tonight's show, first of all, John's in the room. Hey, John, want to give you a shout-out. Here's what we're going over tonight, guys. Our main phase is pretty much going to deal with a few things. First of all, we have a ton of news, like a whole lot of news. But we also we want to go over your deck prep, I guess, you know, and try to – I mean, we're not going to, you know, give away any secrets. If you've got a special super secret card, like, let's not, you know, talk about that.
I'm kind of copying somebody else's deck list card for card, except for maybe, like, one card in the sideboard. So it's not exactly a state secret.
I'm dying of not surprise.
My deck building skills are not up to par to bring in something rogue to an SCG Open.
All right, no, but we're going to talk about that, what you're doing to prepare. I mean, we got some playing time in Friday. We did some practicing. So we're going to go from there. We're going to talk about the news. There's been a lot of news about the MPL this week and our combat phase.
Not much of it good either.
Not really, no. We've got a combat phase here, and we have some mail and Ask Aramis. So this is we have a full show tonight. I'm kind of digging it. So let's just go ahead and get right down to it and start with, you know.
Main phase.
All right, so main phase. Here we go. Aramis is participating this weekend in the Syracuse Open down the throughway from us here. He's going to be playing with the SCG Open. So, you know, we've been prepping. We played a little bit Friday night. I think the video is up on our site.
Yes.
So, you know, so tell us a little bit about what you've been doing to prep. I mean, what can people do if they're going to be playing one of these events? I know we had MCQs this weekend. I don't have any results, man. And plus, I mean, it's an MCQ. So
I saw some results from MCQs. Mono red's not going away.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Monterey's not
going. It got a little better, actually.
Yeah, they actually one of the articles that I read basically said that this is the strongest Monterey has been since the days of Hazoret, which is very high praise. So
yeah, very high praise. I don't know that I totally agree.
Well, Chandra's really the and Tibble, believe it or not, are two of the really big key components to the way the deck operates now.
Yeah, they really are. I've been playing it both in Arena, and I actually went ahead and put it together. In fact, I got my Chandra's in the mail today.
Nice.
But, yeah, it doesn't, yeah. Like, it's kind of how I'm you know, laddering up. And so it's exciting. It's definitely good. I mean, you know, I was asleep on Tibble. I can admit that. But if you're playing a white deck with life gain, it's necessary. Like, you have to sideboard that card in.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was Mono Red's biggest weakness all the time, was running out of gas. And if you're gaining, like I said, the deck has a real easy time dealing 20 to 25 damage. When it gets you the 30-35 damage point, that's when it tends to struggle. If you can shut off your opponent's life gain, it makes your world so much easier. I mean, granted, playing against white, they have access to, you know, I don't know, Ixalan's Binding or something to get rid of your Planeswalker, but they tend to not really board that stuff in. So yeah,
not right now.
Mono reds.
I think they might.
Yeah, mono reds a really big deal. Probably going to see a decent amount of that. If you haven't been listening to the podcast, first of all, why not? Second of all,
and why are you listening now? Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of glad you are, but
picking
really,
it up late, but better late than never. But exactly. I'm bringing Esper Control this weekend. That's the deck I have the most experience with, and the deck I feel the most comfortable with. So that's what I'm going to roll in with.
So, I mean. Did you throw, like, you know, again, don't go too specific, but I mean, other than Liliana, which we all know about, are there any other, like, you know, War of the Spark cards that really impacted your choice on Esper? Or?
Actually, my final deck list that I'm playing does not have Liliana.
Really?
Yeah. I ended up switching out to Ugin.
Actually, I can see that.
Because
I'd be down with that.
The article that I read and the deck list that I based it off of was off of the it was a Channel Fireball article, I think, by Mike Segrist. And
okay.
he said the biggest difference between Liliana and Ugin, they're both finishers and they're both good for Esper. The one problem that Liliana has is that she doesn't deal with planeswalkers unless you ultimate with her, whereas Ugin can kill one right away.
Right.
So that's the one of the weaknesses that Esper has, is that outside of countering of Vraska's Contempt, it really can't deal with too many planeswalkers that well, and Ugin gives them a repeatable way to deal with those kinds of permanents.
I can see that.
Plus, it's colorless, so you never have to worry about saying, oh, geez, I need my second black source. You just give me six, boom, Ugin.
Yep, done, and, you know, and there's not a lot of ramp in that deck, though. I mean, it's going to take you six rounds to get there.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, hopefully by then you've stabilized, and Ugin, yeah. even if you haven't, Ugin comes down and usually does a pretty good job of that by himself.
Very cool. So did Ugin arrive yet? Oh, wait, you got Ugin here.
Yeah, I had a couple of Ugins already, so I didn't have to order any of those.
Good.
Basically, what I've been doing to get ready for the tournament is absorbing as much content as I can about the deck I'm choosing to play. I'm reading articles. I'm looking at deck lists. Trying to play as much as I can, because that's really the best way to do it, is to actually just physically sit down and play. I found a sideboard guide for the deck, so I have a little index card with, you know, with my sideboarding strategies, because that's one of my big weaknesses too, is that I'm not the greatest with sideboarding. Like, I could play against two different players playing the same deck and I'll sideboard differently, whereas if I have a standard plan to go with, it'll be easier for me to be like, all right, I'm playing them, I'm on the draw, boom, 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 this in, this out, I'm ready to go for the next game.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, if I was going with you, I don't know what I'd be playing. I would hate to roll mono red, but it does seem the most stable.
I would say either that or Simic Nexus.
Actually, what I've kind of been having fun with, and I don't know how well it would do, if you want a deck, and maybe this should go on to next week, but I'm sorry, Bant Midrange with Nissa Shakes the World. Like, Bant Midrange without it, I wasn't very stable, but throwing that card in there...
Mm-hmm.
has really, because they go after, what the hell is her name there? Damn it. The Planeswalker. I'm blanking. Well, whenever the green Planeswalker.
Nissa?
Vivian? No, the other one. Vivian Reed, yeah. Whenever Vivian shows up, the three drop, the good one that lets you flash in your creatures, I mean, it becomes a target big time. So turn three, I'll pull that out. Turn four, hopefully I get one or two of the creatures out. And then turn five, if I can get Nissa out, now all of a sudden I'm doubling all of my mana, all of my forest mana, which is all of my green shock lands and all of my forests. I'm making three creatures out of them. Like, I've found every time I've played that deck, like, it can expand if I can get her out. And again, since they're focusing and doing their removal on the Vivians I'm throwing out,
right,
Nissa kind of sneaks in, and I don't think people are hip yet to what she does. So I've had some real success on Arena with her.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of like, this is a fun deck. And I mean, I like mid-rangey, you know. So, well, it depends. It's still kind of combo-ish. Without Nissa in there, my mid-range sucks.
Right.
So, you know, I can go back to what I said before, which is, you know, mid-range, bare bones mid-range is kind of like, But, you know, I've been having a lot of fun with her. And then you throw in, you know, things like Teferi and, you know, the cheap Teferi. I don't even have the 5-drop in there. So it's a pretty heavy Planeswalker deck. And I found a deck list for Jeskai Super Friends.
Okay.
And it's kind of great. And I think, where was it? It was on Goldfish. But it was... I was looking at it today going, this seems like my little kind of deck here. Let me see, where was it? It was just Jeskai Bureaucracy, they called it.
Oh, God.
It's Fibblethip the Lost, God Eternal Kefnet, 3 Dovins, 3 Narsets, a Saheeli, 3 Teferis, 2 Kazminas, and one other of the big Teferis. And then a whole ton of cantrips, 3 Mox Ambers.
Okay.
And an Ugin.
Okay.
So I was like, that looks like it could be fun.
So it's almost like a Jeskai Super Friends.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's using a lot of the Mox Amber, which I'm like, again, that could be fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So I may actually play around with that too. I mean, I don't have 4 mobilized districts yet. I do need some of those anyway. I wanted those, you know, but I've got most of the other land base. I definitely have the planeswalkers.
Right.
So, but now, I mean, getting it back to our topic here, though. So, I mean, you've gotten your stuff. I mean, like, what's your like game plan? I mean, obviously you're gonna face, I mean, mono red. You're gonna face it. There's mm-hmm. no way.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have enough matchups? Do you have enough ways to get around it? Or,
well, Esper can do pretty well against mono red.
This new mono red, though?
Even this new mono red, because if for no other reason that they have enough incidental life gain in the main deck to sort of handle some of that, and if it goes to, you know, the second or third game, you board in, you know, like Cryo the Carnariums, you board in, you board out like, you actually board out some of your Teferis, I think.
You would, yeah. I would.
The 3-drop Teferis, and you're bringing in more creature hate, you're bringing in Moment of Craving, you're bringing in like Enter the God Eternals, which is a backbreaker.
I was
going
to say the Enter
them.
The God Eternals over Moment of Craving because of the Chain Whirlers. It's hard to, the Moment of Craving and Carnarium don't do nothing with the Chain Whirler.
No, but I mean, you have Cast Down, you have Vraska's Contempt,
true.
You have Kaya's Wrath. There's plenty of ways to kill Chain Whirler.
Oath of Kaya is also pretty good.
Yeah, Oath of Kaya is good. So you know, there's a lot of ways that you can deal with Mono Red. You have great matchups after sideboarding. A lot of the time. I mean, you might be not quite as favored game one, but you know, it's just the biggest thing about mono red. Like I always said, is that sometimes if they get the nut draw, they can kill you in 4 turns.
Turn
and there's
4.
Nothing you can
yep.
do. But if you're able to stabilize against them, you have a really good chance of winning. So I'm going to
see. What I was going to say about the mono red now is that the one thing about this is, if you think about it, I mean, other than Tybalt, you know, Chandra is a 4-drop. In some cases, she replaces. In a lot of cases, I'm finding out she's in addition to the Frenzy, so that's another 4-drop. So like people are kind of like the Experimental Frenzy deck. They're like maybe they take one out and put 2 Chandras in, but then they got to take something out that's smaller. Actually, I'm finding too that it's kind of slowing red down a little bit because people are really trying to jam these in.
If you think about the old red deck from the previous standard season, it was playing 5-drops in Glorybringer, so it can handle because it had Hazoret and it had Glorybringer. Some of them also played Rekindling Phoenix, so it's not
God,
like it can't handle
deck.
4-drops. And Chandra, like we said last week, she's not a planeswalker you can attack because you're taking damage when you do it. Which is feeding into their game plan, but then if you leave it alone, it's going to ultimate and deal at least 7 damage to you on its own.
Yeah, you definitely. It's basically planes, or it's basically Vraska's Contempt at this point.
Yeah, if you can't counter it, you have to hopefully have a Vraska's Contempt because otherwise, it's going to just wreck your day. I know I'm going to see plenty of mono red. I know I'm going to see plenty of Esper. I'm going to probably see a decent amount of Simic Nexus.
I think you're going to see a lot of Simic Nexus actually. I don't think people are playing Esper Control yet. I don't think they're ready. I think a lot of people are still trying to crack the code
of
the new standard.
The most recent MCQ had, I think, 2 or 3 Esper Controls in the top 8. There were 2 or 3 mono reds, and the rest, I think, were white weenie.
Really?
Yeah, so aggro decks are still there. I mean, it's not... the things haven't pivoted, but Esper Control is still the best deck in the format.
Yeah,
it has the most answers to most of the matchups where you know you'll have a better chance of winning. You don't have as many dead draws. I mean, you know, if you're playing against a mirror, you have to hope you draw the right half of your deck. If you draw your creature kill and they're playing a control deck, you're like, well, these are dead cards. But you know, it's all about mulligans.
It's gonna be an interesting weekend. I mean, maybe after this, if we get done early enough, we can roll into Arena real quick and do a Bant again because I think that was a good matchup for you.
Mm-hmm.
You had some fun against Bant Nexus. So and mono red,
yeah,
or not Bant Nexus, Bant midrange,
yeah.
The and Gruul, I think too. I hear some talk of Gruul coming. Samut helped, and
yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see what happens with Gruul, but I think it's going to be it's going to be a ton of the established decks. You're not going to see quite as many rogue strategies coming in this weekend
just yet.
It's a big enough tournament where people, unless they really think they've got something that's going to beat that week's meta. You're probably not going to see people rolling in with too many spicy things unless they just really think it's a good choice. So,
right.
I'm going with, you know, it's kind of the safe pick, but then at the same time, like I said, I've been playing this deck the longest, so I'm most comfortable with Esper Control.
Right, because you're not going to bring Bat Nexus yet, which is also making kind of a comeback, I also read. So
yeah, people are still extremely nervous about Reclamation and Nexus of Fate. So
right.
That particular dead horse is still getting beat somewhere in a field. So we'll have to just see if it finally takes the next step. I mean, Tamiyo is just such a huge addition to that deck. I mean, she is ridiculous. So
she is. I got four of her.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just if you're able to stick a Tamiyo and use her a couple of times. I was just playing a match online before we went live, and I wasn't able to stop their Tamiyo, and I had countered or killed three of the Reclamations, but they're just like, I'm just going to get that one back. So yeah, that didn't end well for me.
What if you sideboard Ashiok for that? So where you get rid of Reclamation, but then you find a way to exile their graveyard before they can get that shit back.
Well, the problem is that Ashiok doesn't really do anything on its own, and right. that's such a specialized card that it'd be dead against every other matchup. So
that's why I'm saying with sideboard.
But it's also a case of that sideboard is so specialized. What do you take out?
True. Yeah, I get it. I get it.
You're better off just playing Thief of Sanity and stealing their Tamiyo.
That also works.
So,
well, so, dude, best of luck. I mean, I'm pulling for you this weekend, obviously.
Thank you.
I'm
excited.
I think you've got a good shot at it. So, of at least doing something decent, and it'll be nice for you to get some SCG points, I'm sure.
Yeah. So the way that it works is everybody tied for 64th place or who has X number of points after the first 9 rounds advances to day 2. In Richmond, what that meant was 6x and better, so 18 points. So if you had to have at least 6 wins, and you were tied for 64th, you got in. So that was 116 people made day 2 of that tournament. So I think that was out of a field of 500 or so. So I think if it's about similar to that this weekend, 6-3 should get you in. So I should be able to have a decent day and make day 2, which would be freaking awesome. I'd be so happy with that.
Well, yeah, I could imagine that. I think you could do. I mean, you're pretty well positioned with that deck, and you've had some experience playing it. And the upside is, it is Syracuse. I mean, there'll be a lot of grinders there. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've listened to a few casts, and you know, guys are talking about going and making the roll. But I mean, I don't think. I think with the MPL and things of that nature, I don't know that you're necessarily going to see as many of the big bad showing up because, you know.
Well, I know Ben Stark was at Richmond, so there's a possibility of some big-time pros being there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just don't want you to go Doran on me. Whatever you do, don't go Doran on me.
I don't get it.
You know, Doran the Siege Tower? It's 0-5. It's Power and Toughness 0-5.
Oh, jeez. I get it. Oh, yeah, I get it. But the way it deals, that deals damage equal to its toughness, doesn't it? So that would actually be 5-0.
Yeah, it's 0-5, though. Do not go 0-5.
Well, I see. Just
you know, come on. There is the cat. You listen. You're representing the cat. Make sure you have your business cards, by the way. See if you can drum up a few interviews and shit. You know,
I'll see what I can do.
Don't see what you can do. You're a co-host and a producer. It says right on your card.
I'm going to be a little focused on trying to win this stupid thing.
Screw winning. It's about the podcast, man. But with that being said, I mean, you know, I'm pulling for you, like I said. But I want to kind of pivot here real quick while we're still in main phase.
Yep.
There has been a ton of news this week. I mean, last week our combat went from where we thought it was going to be, and we started really going at about you would want to Nobby.
Yeah.
And sure enough, a day and a half later, Magic puts out the press release, and oh, he got spanked.
They dropped the banhammer real hard on Yuya.
Well, I mean, it's like I said during that combat. I mean, you can't afford. This guy is a Hall of Famer, and he's MPL. You can't afford. What's that?
Not anymore.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore.
At that point. Like, he's a Hall of Famer, MPL. You have to do something pretty hefty against him. So it came out, and basically what Wizards decided is that he's 100% guilty. That their press release said that they had a bunch of judges, a bunch of people who were at the event, a bunch of other players, things of that nature, look at his, you know, look at the sleeves and take a look and see what happened. And then I guess they went to the tapes.
Yeah.
And you know, we're looking at it that way. And basically they said without a shadow of a doubt, he did it. So what they did was he's out, 100% out of the MPL.
Yep.
So I don't know if that means he can come back after, but he's also got a 30-month suspension or suspension from all DCI events.
Yeah, hold just for 1 second. Let that sink in for a second. 30 months.
2.5 years.
2.5 years he's banned from all DCI sanctioned events, which means he can't even go to a pre-release.
By the way, if to put this in set parlance, for the next 10 sets he cannot play.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yes.
Also,
but again, he needs it. It's well earned.
And don't forget too, the other part of his punishment, he was also removed from the Magic Hall of Fame.
Yes. And he should have been. I mean, we went over this. You know, it wasn't a lifetime ban. They didn't Pete Rose him.
No, and I don't think they should have.
No, but definitely pulling him out of the Hall of Fame. I mean, here's the thing. Being caught cheating, and if you've done it, and if you are 100% guilty according to them, they have to take a stance because it calls into question everything he did over his entire, quote-unquote, Magic career. I get that, you know, and I'm 100% for it. I am glad they're doing it. I feel very, very confident that, you know, I'm not sure if he's going to come back after 30 months. I don't know that I would.
That's tough. That's really tough. I mean, if you really love the game, it's like taking a break. I mean, I stopped for what?
5 years?
10 years. More than
I stopped for 15.
Almost 15 years. And I mean, I came back, so it's possible to do it. But at the level that he's at, basically only being able to play amongst his friends for the next 2.5 years.
Well, it's not like they can keep him from Arena. You know, I mean, he can just roll up an account. You know, he can still play, just can't be, quote unquote, competitive.
He could, but I don't. That's actually an interesting thing. How does that work? Because you can qualify for MCQs through Arena.
Well, I have a feeling that if he signs up and, you know, he qualifies, then they realize
it'll pass over him to the next person.
Yeah, they'd have to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they really can't stop him. He can totally put his name in. Because, again, this is actually going to lead to something we're going to talk about during combat. I mean, with regard, well, not even combat, but this makes you think about Arena. Like, realize this is the internet. Like, an anonymity is kind of like what it's supposed to do, you know. And if they're going to sit there and hold this guy's feet to the fire, and you know, what's to stop him from rolling up a guy in Arena and, you know, making it go at least in there and being able to keep his finger on the pulse for 2.5 years? I can't blame him. Then again, I mean, there's another side of me that would be like, I'd be pissed. Be like, I ain't touching this sport again. Are you kidding me? Look what they did to me. If he really didn't do it, I wouldn't want to see another Magic card. Well, like, I'd be like, you know.
I'll say this about the whole thing. He and his team, Cygames, have been maintaining his innocence, saying that he was basically framed, which I don't buy it. Based on, you know, they were looking at past tournaments and everything else, so I don't think there's that big of a conspiracy against Yuya Watanabe. He obviously cheated. He obviously deserved to get suspended. What I'll say about the suspension is that I think it's appropriate. It's devastating. I mean,
it is.
I mean, when I read it, I audibly went, "Wow, I can't believe this happened." At the same time, I'm kind of sad that they waited until they had the MPL to start dropping suspensions like this, because cheating has been an issue in the game for a long time, and there are other pros who have been known to cheat or have been heavily suspected of cheating who have either only ever gotten slaps on the wrist or have never gotten, you know, caught or punished for what they did. I'm glad they're sending this message now. It's a shame that it's not really going to have as much as the intended effect because of all the other stuff that's going on with the MPL right now, which we'll get to. But I hope this sends a message to everyone that has aspirations of playing professionally, that Wizards is watching now, probably, you know, more than they should have been in the past, but they are definitely watching now. And if you cheat and you get caught, maybe it's just because it was Yuya Watanabe and they wanted to use him as a pariah.
Right.
Well, it worked.
Or example, yeah. And again, they wrote it, you know, when you're in the MPL and, you know, when you're in the Hall of Fame, a lot more is expected of you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you become a poster child for this game. I'm not even going to call it a sport. It's an e-sport, whatever. I'm not even sure we're there yet. We'll talk about that in combat. But from a strictly hobby game perspective, where we have quote-unquote professionals playing it, you know, there is a certain level expected of you of play, and you're supposed to be an example. Mm-hmm. And when it's found out you cheat, it doesn't just hurt you. It hurts the entire game.
It hurts the brand, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about the guys. Okay, so he got disqualified. Watanabe did.
Mm-hmm.
Did they go back and the guys he beat, did they give them the points? Did it change anybody's, you know, ranking? Like, imagine that. Okay, he got DQ'd right before top eight.
Yeah,
which means he beat 12 other people.
Yeah, he had intentionally drawn the last round to guarantee his spot.
Right. So he beat 12 other people or 13 other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, could you imagine being one of those guys and going, what the hell, man?
Well, one of the writers, I think, for either Star City or Channel Fireball was the one who benefited from his DQ. He got into the top eight because Yuya was disqualified.
Exactly, because he was number nine.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about, think about it, okay? You're playing round three, okay? You're 1-1 so far.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose to Yuya Watanabe. Now you're 1-2. It changes your ranking. It changes who you're playing against. It changes the rest of the Swiss round is changed.
Yeah.
Like, and these are ripple effects that cannot be, you know, it's not like it's on Wizards to go back and do the math and figure it out. I understand that's not possible. But when you cheat, that is one of those things. It's like you're not just doing yourself. You're making it so other guys who, you know, might have a shot of, you know, like yourself Saturday. Imagine if you found out that one of the pros you were playing against, if you end up playing against a pro, one of those people you're playing against ends up, you know, beating you, and then you find out they cheated.
Yeah.
And now you're like, you go back and do the math and go, oh, my God, I would have sat against this, you know, this probably deck, and I would have been able to do – it changes your entire order of the event.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And here's the thing, too, is that – last week, I was willing to give Yuya the benefit of the doubt, saying that, okay.
I know you were.
Well, because, you know, you have, like, until everything comes out, you can't just say, well, he was, you know, he's always been a cheater. I was thinking that, you know, maybe it was the pressure of being in the MPL. Maybe it was, you know, wanting to maintain that level and thinking that I have to keep doing this because this is my meal ticket. But since they apparently went back to past tournaments.
Yeah,
that totally removes any respect that I had for Yuya Watanabe. He deserves to be suspended, but I will still say this. He does have a chance for redemption. If he decides to come back after 30 months, when his DCI number is reinstated, and if he performs well, don't know that he'd make the MPL again, but he can certainly qualify for, you know, Mythic Championships and things of that nature, and if he's done his time, more power to him. The one thing that I would say is that when he does come back, he can't complain if he gets deck checked half a dozen times during the tournament.
Oh, God, no.
For the next, you know, 6 months to a year, because I'm sorry, you now have that stigma. You are a cheater.
Yeah. You're Mr. Cheater Pants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's 100%, you know, thinking about that, I mean, I feel bad in some ways. Again, all right, if it is as he says, and he has been, you know, framed or whatever, yeah, okay, this sucks. This is a bad beat, but there's nothing you can do about it.
At this point,
I don't think that's the case, though.
At this point, Yuya needs to man up and say that he did it. There's no,
yeah.
there's so much evidence out there that basically says there's no reasonable way that someone else could have marked his sleeves while he wasn't looking. And
right.
that there was no way it was one of the judges. And what, did the judge cast Nexus of Fate, go back in time and mark his other sleeves?
I mean, yeah, it's horrible. So, I mean, Yuya Watanabe is out of the MPL.
Won't be missed for the next 30 months.
And that's a black mark on the MPL, in my opinion, too.
Big
but then something else came out just today.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gary Thompson, which is a name that, you know, we didn't start the podcast at this point, but it was, I think it was last year, there was an event going to be happening. Was it a Pro Tour?
It was Worlds.
Was Worlds, that's right. It was right December last year.
Gerry Thompson pulled out a Worlds the night before the tournament started.
Yes, he wrote this really long post about why he did it. And, you know, to be fair, some of it sounded a little bit like, you know, I don't know, a little self-important, don't get me wrong. I've never been a big fan of this guy.
He
kind of has an attitude of like, you know, I'm better, but On the other hand, I didn't disagree with a lot of what he said, especially when it comes to things like, you know, equality and, you know, representation and things of that nature.
Yeah, and how the pros were being treated and
right, and how the pros were being treated. And Hasbro, and you know, by extension, and WotC directly, I mean, they've never really taken a good hand of their pros. I mean, they really haven't. I think in the if I remember correctly, in the beginning, like, they acted like pros were kind of like outside the, they were kind of like something like, you know, that they pretended didn't exist, and then all of a sudden they got too big, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, let's organize and do this and that and the other thing. And again, I'm going back, you know, 20 years here, so forgive me if my memory's wrong. But even still, WotC and Hasbro have been notoriously lousy when it comes to the quote-unquote talent, you know, of these players playing. To the point where now, I mean, yeah, they start this MPL, and they make all these changes to GPs and Pro Tours and the Mythic Championships.
Yep.
And the first thing they did was they said, yeah, if you qualify for Mythic Championship, we're not going to pay your hotel room, but hey, we're going to pay you if you come in at 64th place. You'll get paid $700, which is the cost of your room, but unless it's in London
or some other hyper expensive city.
Yeah, and unless you get disqualified. Like, yeah, again, there's just a lot of problems that they've always had, so I get that point. It's just sometimes I'm like, you know, the way he writes his letters, and I mean, I'm reading through it now, what he wrote, you know, why I quit the Magic Pro League, and it's at the game podcast or the GAMpodcast.com. If you want to go look that up, guys, I'm sure it's right on the main page. It was written May 13th, so it was written today. And his TLDR of it is, I joined the Magic Pro League in the first place because it seemed easier to make a difference from the inside. I was wrong. The lack of transparency and unwillingness to listen to feedback continue to be huge issues. A lot has happened in 6 months. Here are the quick hits. And he goes through this litany of why. I don't disagree with anything he's saying. I just kind of, I think sometimes I just disagree with his, like, method, you know, and it's like,
I'll say this. He's definitely taken the role of whistleblower.
Yeah.
And for good or ill, this is shining a light on the things that Wizards needs to improve.
I don't disagree there.
You might disagree with his delivery, but the message itself rings loud and clear that Wizards still does not really care about their pros.
Of course they don't.
Which
My
is a
gosh.
Shame, though, because they're the ambassadors to the game. They're the ones that people look up to. They don't look up to Mark Rosewater as much as they look up to Reed Duke.
Exactly. You know?
They want to be the next Reed Duke. I mean, maybe some people want to be the next Morrow, and that's great because it'll keep the game alive. But these are the ones that are like, okay, we are the ones that did the hard work. We got to this level. Recognize us and make it worth our while for all these hundreds or thousands of hours that we've spent perfecting our craft. These people are professionals in that sense of the word. This is what they do.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's not all that they do. And
for some of them it is.
For some it is, especially if you're in the MPL now. But, I mean, for the most part, I mean, most of these people do have day gigs, and that is important. But likewise, too, I can understand some of, like, WotC's thought process, which is, at the end of the day, they created a recreational game, you know, that you know, now it's great that some people are pros and they took it very seriously and they're grinding and they're doing this, and I think it's wonderful, and it is, and I have no aspirations to ever be pro. Like, I will go to events because they're fun, and, I mean, it's a geek moment, like, you're just in a room with other people playing Magic. But for me, where I sit, that's where it ends. You know, it's like, and I'll watch them on Twitch, and I'll root for them. I've got people I root for. I don't necessarily root for Reed Duke, because that seems like rooting for Dale Earnhardt, you know, every time he races a car until he runs into a wall. But, oh, sorry, too soon? But, I mean, for the most part, though, I mean, you know, obviously LSV and things like that. There are people you can always root for, and that's cool. But, I mean, to me, Jerry's always been one of these guys. He's like, there's this video I saw once of, like, how people, you know, if you left a party the way you leave Facebook. You know, and it's basically like this guy walks in, he's over dramatic. He's like, I am leaving the party. I am going away now. Do not try to stop me. And it's like, okay, we get it. Yeah, and you're right. You're not wrong, dude. And I do. I back you 100%. It's just the way you do it. Like doing it the night before Worlds as opposed to the week before Worlds when somebody could have got your slot.
Not really.
Oh, really?
Not really, because okay. the way the Worlds is structured is it's you have to basically earn your way to get there. So
okay,
it did cause a logistical nightmare for Wizards because it basically meant that one person had a bunch of buys. But it's hard because...
It is hard.
At the end of the day, what Magic is trying to do is catch up to other esports or other sports in general. Because if you think about it, all the stuff that we watch on ESPN, all the stuff that we watch on Twitch, they're games. Most of them played by kids. And now these
are
adults playing these games. They're getting paid handsomely. Now, I don't think any of the Magic pros are expecting, you know, multi-million dollar contracts. I don't think they're asking for that at all. I think, you know, they need to be compensated fairly. And
I agree.
If there's going to be a professional league, there has to be a reason to want to stay in that league. And a lot of the things that he's talking about in his article, you know, like such as everybody in the Magic Pro League this year, there's no guarantee they'll be there next year.
Right. And there shouldn't be.
And there shouldn't be, but there also should be information on how to requalify. And there's not that. They don't know how it's going
to
happen after this year. They don't know for other people who are aspiring how they can get in. And what he was also saying, too, and I don't know if maybe so much it was Jerry, but there was other pros who were chiming in on this, saying that the MPL is a great idea, but the fact that it cut out all the benefits for silver, gold, and platinum pros,
right,
who have done just as much grinding as these guys, but they're, you know, 33rd through 100, how is it fair for them, too? You know, it's just, there's a lot that I think Magic is trying to do with fixing their professional aspect of the game, but I think they rushed it.
I think they
wanted to get something out there, get it started, and sort of fix it as they went along. And that's not really how it works. They really have to be able to sit down and say, okay, so we're going to have this league. How big is it going to be? How long are these contracts going to last? How do people get renewed? How do other people qualify? What does this have to do with the Mythic Championships? You know, there's so many little strings that I don't think they tied off when they started this whole thing that now it looks like the league is fraying a little bit.
Right. Well, I mean, then that's going to bring it. You know what? Let's just go right into it because, I mean, the conversation is naturally going there. Let's, you know.
Yeah.
Combat phase.
Okay, we're bringing up combat phase here because at the end of the day, the question we want to talk about tonight, we want to kind of argue is that, okay, with Jerry leaving, this is the, or, yeah, it's Jerry Thompson, right?
Jerry Thompson, yeah.
Yeah. This is the third person who either quit or was removed from the MPL since it started.
And it's only 6 months old.
It's only 6 months old. So the question then becomes, is WotC, is Hasbro, are they ready for this? And I got to tell you, I'm kind of, we may not have a combat here because I am totally in agreement too. I mean, and one of the things that Jerry says right in his letter, I could not agree with more, is that at this point it should be very clear that the players selected to represent Magic at its highest level were not thoroughly vetted. And then he goes on to say, and he admits his hypocrisy in this. You know, he says that you can argue I'm in that camp. However, I'd like to think that if things were progressing rather than regressing, I would have held on to my position. Following my Worlds protest, I've tried to go through the proper channels, but all that got me was a string of unanswered messages. I don't think my decision to leave is unjustified. I don't disagree with the fact he's doing it. I may disagree with the kind of how.
I do think what this does is that it forces Wizards to kind of acknowledge it because...
Right.
Although they did by just saying, hey, he's gone, wish you luck, and then like 10 minutes later announcing the two additions to take his place and Yuya Watanabe's place, which I kind of have a problem with it. Nothing against Savich and nothing against...
Right.
What was the name of the other...
Jessica?
Jessica. I think it was Jessica, yeah. Nothing against the two new players coming in. But Savich was primarily a Hearthstone player until he picked up Arena. And I believe Jennifer is the highest ranked
female
player on Magic Arena. So it kind of felt like a token move saying, oh, you're the best girl here, so here's your spot.
Right.
I mean, okay, in that respect, sure, she absolutely earned it, but why now? And then they're all like, oh, we're being inclusive. Look at what we're doing.
Yep, and then they're going to put out a press release, and, you know, and that's part of this, is that it does seem like they're just, it does seem like they're not ready. It really does. It seems like they're, that WotC is unprepared for what it takes to have a successful, you know, esport. And I don't think they necessarily know how they want to do it in regards to paper versus, you know, electronic. I mean, if you look at, and they, and everybody's talked about this, the Mythic Championship 2 in London, one of the lowest watched events in a long time. And then they go to the question of why. Well, their first answer is, it's modern. Nobody wants to watch modern, which is a whole bag of horse crap.
That is not true. And here's the here's the thing.
You did it during freaking pre-release, you morons.
Well, they did. Well, and a couple other things about that, too, is somebody else touched on this. At least the one aspect of it was that the production value for the Mythic Invitational, remember how awesome that was?
Yes.
Having the players introduced and just all the bells and whistles that they did. For the next Mythic Championship, they went right back to where they were before, which was this normal coverage, which it sort of seemed like, I don't know, hypocritical or oxymoronic, I guess, in a sense. I don't know. I don't know what the right word is, but it's just, it was one of those things where it's like, you went all out for the Invitational, but you're not going to go all out for what's actually the most important tournaments.
It's not consistent.
It's not consistent. And also, yes, I understand that the Twitch views were inflated artificially because they had the stream embedded in ads. Whatever.
Well, they had the stream embedded in Arena.
Yeah, so...
which
okay.
they needed to do, by the way. You absolutely should be doing
and
that.
Whatever, that's fine. It gets unintentional views. Some people may be like, oh, what's this? Click on it, where they might not have before. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But you need to make people want to watch the Mythic Championship too. So you need to put the bells and whistles in there. If you're going to have this pro league, if you're going to say we're spending all this money to make the professional, you know, to make MPL and esports better, it's supporting the paper game too. You have to put the money forward to do it. You have to put the production value forward to it. It's just, you know, Day 9 was a great announcer. Becca Scott, great. Like, I loved the energy that she had. She was so enthusiastic when people advanced. She was literally jumping up and down and clapping. It was great.
I get it, and I don't disagree. Like, the level, the quality level of an arena championship versus paper, it's night and day. I mean, the Mythic Championship looked like every other Pro Tour that we've seen. You know, there was nothing really special other than the deck list being open so that we could use cardboard live, which I would submit also inflated their numbers as far as the success of the London Mulligan. Because, yeah, it changed everything. But the fact that you, because they did both those things at once, you couldn't have a good test for either. You know, it's like, well, we have to decide if we're going to do this from now on. So, we have to decide if we're going to use the London Mulligan from now on. I was looking at that. I was like, are you freaking kidding me? How the hell are you supposed to know which one's really going to work? You know, it's a whole lot of crap.
I think overall the London Mulligan was a success. I think the open deck list is a success. I think both of those things.
I disagree on that.
I think both of those are things that should be going forward, only because with the way that they did it, they were open except for round one, and you were allowed to look at them for a minute before having to put them away for the rest of the match. And PBDR did an article on Channel Fireball about that today, basically saying that, listen, I like the idea, and I agree with him, I like the idea of the public deck list, of open deck lists, but if it's going to be public, make it so it's always public. So that way, you know, you can, it's like your sideboard. You're allowed to look at your sideboard at any point during a match and say, okay, well, I might be boarding this in. You know, or as you're taking notes during a game, if you thought erase for someone, you can write down the cards in their hand. It'd be like saying, okay, I have to memorize the cards in your hand now instead of having that readily available. There's no reason not to have the deck list there, too.
See, and I disagree with that wholeheartedly. And I disagree with it from a standpoint of it, all the way around. I think open deck lists are bad, 100% bad. And I say this because I love when somebody's playing, like we saw it a few times last year. It was how Mono Red became basically Rakdos last year during the main standard, was because somebody got the genius idea to put Scrap Heap Scrounger in. And so it threw people off that first day, that first game. They're like, holy crap, where the hell did this come from? If you have the deck list in front of you, it removes those surprises. And it makes all of it, you know, sideboarding and all that, kind of, it makes everything a little bit easier.
Well,
and it keeps everything safe and it makes everything meta, and there's no room for real innovation.
I disagree with that a little bit. Only because, yes, you have the deck list in front of you and you're like, scrap heap scrounger, what's that doing in there? But here's the thing. It's like having a playbook to the other team during a game. You can have the plays, you still have to execute.
You're not allowed to have the team's playbook. They guard it with their lives.
Yeah, but this is all public. It's public information anyway because people can see it on the stream.
Right. They can see it on a stream, and I get that. But, I mean, the fact is they can see it on a stream, and they you see it while you're playing it, you know?
Well, you still, and I do. Even if you have the deck list in front of you, you still have to make the sideboarding decision saying, and you may not even have those cards to deal with it in your deck because you weren't expecting Scrap Heap Scrounger. This way, the only difference is that instead of being surprised by the Scrap Heap Scrounger when it's played, you're surprised when you read the deck list and going, oh crap, I have to deal with this. What's in my sideboard? So that's something else you have to think about during the match. But at the same time, it is easier, yes, but you shouldn't have to memorize all this information saying, how many of these are they playing? How many of these are they playing?
That's only day one, too. You can't tell me these guys didn't go back to the hotel rooms and go, okay, tomorrow I'm going to be facing so-and-so.
Well, you don't know who you're playing first round the next day.
9 times out of 10, you can kind of figure it out, though. I'm 8-0. Who are the other 8-0s?
Yeah, but then you have to look at the tiebreakers. You have to say, okay, right. Do I know what this person's match win percentage is? Do I know what this person's opponent game win percentage is?
But you can usually figure things like that.
Narrow it down, but you're not going to know without a shadow of a doubt unless you're like the first place player. If you're like right on the cusp at like 64th place, you're not going to know who you're playing.
Right. It's one of those things. I really find open deck lists to be, I really hope they don't continue it. And I have a feeling they will, because they're like, Cardboard Live was amazing. I'm like, it was okay. It really was. But I know that they're sitting there, and the reason they did this was because during the Mythic Invitational, because everything was in Arena and they had 3 days to do it, like, they had their entire deck lists and everything was loaded in Cardboard Live, and so everybody kind of had to know and blah, blah, blah. It's a little different. You know, they wanted to try in a paper. I just think it removes a certain level of the complexity of, you know, paper. So,
well, luckily, I mean, like you said, you don't have any aspirations of going to the really
true,
big tournaments. So you wouldn't have to deal with that at like Friday Night Magic or a pre-release or even,
right.
You know, maybe even an MCQ, you might not have to deal with it. They really, I think, are only looking at doing this at the highest level events.
Right.
Only because, you know, these people have already done the work, so does it make it a little easier for them? Sure, but there's already enough stress at playing a 9-round day one, 6-round day two cut to top eight, which is what I'm dealing with this weekend. I'd love to have access to my opponent's deck list before the game starts.
Right.
Just if for no other reason to see what I'm up against.
I get that. I guess I can understand.
Because
it,
think about this. If you're playing a control deck and you don't have open deck lists, you draw an opening hand that's full of creature removal, you don't know what you're playing against. You don't know whether or not to mulligan that hand.
But that's Magic, man. Like, that's part of the game. That's part of what I love about it. Is like, it's kind of like chess. You don't understand if this person knows the gambits you're playing or whatever. Or poker, okay? Like, I don't know what they have. You know, when I'm playing Texas Hold'em or whatever, it's not like they're showing me their whole cards.
Yeah, but that's kind of a bad comparison because the complexity
of
poker is so much less than Magic.
I get that. But the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, from this standpoint of, you know, there's a certain, you're giving up a lot by giving somebody the deck list. And I don't think that it's necessary. In fact, I think it hurts the game. And I mean, I get for some it's better. But for others, I think it would be like I said, I think it's going to stifle innovation. I think you're not going to see guys
maybe a little
getting all creative if they can't surprise. And don't get me wrong. I mean, the minute you played Scrap Heap Scrounger in the first game and there are 16 people around, they're all going to go, oh, shit, he played Scrap Heap Scrounger. This guy's running like a red and black. Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, and they would talk, but it becomes a part of the game, and it's something I think gets lost. But that being said, I do think the MPL is, we've done it again, man. We started combat in one place, went to another. The MPL is definitely, I don't know that they're ready for prime time yet. I mean, even, I don't know if you got a chance to watch any of their 4-hour like little thing this weekend.
No, I didn't get to see that.
It's lousy. It's horrible. It's the Mythic Invitational but instead of being able to see the players as they're playing, they have static photos. And then you've got three chuckleheads from a studio who already have it pre-taped giving commentary. And it's like...
So it's not even live?
Not even live. So it was just... It's on Twitch. You can find it on the Magic page. I got through probably about 20 minutes, and then I'm like, this is so pointless. So I just left. I stopped watching it. And, I mean, so I don't think the MPL is ready. I don't think Wizards knows how to make an eSport yet. If they were smart, they would go and hire somebody from Overwatch or from... Or World of Warcraft.
Or Hearthstone.
Or Hearthstone. Somebody who knows how to make an eSport successful. Because I don't think right now they have that.
But, which is... It's such a shame because Arena is perfect. That is the perfect platform for the eSport. And it's just...
It is.
It's You're Wizards dropping the ball yet again. And it's this one is epic. I don't know... Here's a question. Do you think the MPL survives after this season?
Not in the way it is. I think they're going to have to make some wholesale changes next year. I think what they'll do is they'll say the season's over, and then they'll have an off season, and the off season will expand and become, you know, and during that time they'll rejigger things and they will try to figure out what they did wrong. Because I don't think too many people are, you know, I don't think too many people are watching it. Like, I'd be very interested to see the numbers. Hmm. But, John's going to weigh in here.
John's on my side.
He said, I agree that John is watching live. So if you're listening to the audio stream of this from your iPhone or whatever, you know, you should tune in on Monday nights around 8 o'clock. But anyway, Eastern. John writes, I agree that variance is a part of Magic, and I think that playing Esper and keeping 7 with a bunch of creature removal against a blind deck is part of that, and a large part of the game's complexity. However, I think removing as much of that variance as possible in higher levels of play with that much prize support at stake is still the right call. John, you're wholeheartedly wrong.
I agree with you completely, John. We can take the win on this one.
I'm not going to give you the win. It's definitely still... Oh, wait, he has gone on to say, at that point, you should be rewarded for skilled play, not for keeping an awesome hand against every deck but the mirror and then getting punished because you didn't know the opponent was on the mirror. I don't know that I can agree with that. I think... Because, you know what? Then why do we have mana? Why don't we just do the Hearthstone model and you get one mana every turn? Like, if we're going to remove variance, why aren't we removing that?
Well, they're not removing the variance. It's just they're removing one aspect of variance that you have some control over, where it's information. It's public information. So it's information that should be public. It should be not private at some point, but then public at a different point. If they're going to do this, they need to go all in, or they need to get rid of it completely. Either way, I'm fine.
Right.
Honestly.
All right. We'll agree to disagree on this one.
Well, that's what combat's about. We're not supposed to agree on anything.
All right, but let's go ahead and...
Main phase.
Let's go ahead and get into main phase part two here. So we do have some mail, which is kind of great. You can email us. And most of these, I think both of these are Ask Aramis. Both of these are pretty cool. And you can email us at podcast@planestalkerpodcast.com. So since these are Ask Aramis, I'll play the part of people asking. First one we're going to go to is our new listener, one of our new listeners. I'm assuming he's not the only new listener. God, I hope he's not. but his title on his email, which I think is great, is Nick the Nerd. And he wrote in Saturday saying, hey, guys. So I've been listening to your podcast for a few weeks now, and
thank
I'm
you,
loving
by the way.
It. Yes, thank you very much. And he spelled loving wrong. I was wondering if you guys play any janky decks. There's a question for you. Have fun with this, Aramis. If you guys play any janky decks, or do you just stick to the metagame? I think you can do both, sir. I just started with Dom. I'm assuming Dominaria. So I'm pretty happy you don't talk about Modern, LOL. Would love to hear some stuff on new deck techs, if that's something you think you guys want to dive into, of course. Thanks, and keep up the great work. Nick from Canada, California. I think he meant Canada, CA, but that's, you know. All right, so, Aramis.
Yes.
Do you ever play a janky deck?
I used to.
You don't play them anymore?
Well, here's the thing. Where I live, there's nobody else that I don't have a play group. So if I had a play group, I would probably build like a commander deck or a casual deck. When I first got back into the game, I played pretty nice life gain deck with Crested Sunmares. That was pretty awesome.
It was great. It was a God Pharaoh gift deck.
Well, no, it wasn't God Pharaoh's gift.
Oh, no, that was the white.
It was mono white. It had like Regal Caracals. It had, God, what's the name of the cat? Sacred Cats.
Sacred Cat.
It had Crested Sunmares. It had Anointed Procession. And then it did so well against you, you copied it. And then I found the God Pharaoh's gift deck.
And then I copied that.
And then you copied that, and thus the.
And
the,
then I went to. Then
the
I
arms
to
race
Red,
started
you didn't
at that
copy
point.
That.
That's when the arms race started. But I'll say this: is that generally, I mean, if I'm able to play a casual deck, if I'm able to play a tournament deck, as long as I'm playing Magic, I'm happy.
I think you know what I'm going to go here and say that I do occasionally, but I do it inside Arena. Like, yeah. Every once in a while, I've got a Famished Paladin deck, because I just love that thing. And if you can sneak it past him in a best of one, which I do, and I play it sometimes in competitive, or not competitive constructed, but the traditional, or the constructed deck, like the
non-ranked.
Yeah, non-ranked constructed, just for fun. Mm-hmm. And you know what? When you get to pull it off, it's fun. I'm sorry. When you start plaguing them for one at a time, and they realize what's happened, and they quit in rage, you're just like, I've done my job. we've always played, you and I have always kind of played funny, janky decks. You had that Thousand Year Storm deck that you played with for a little while.
Yeah, but that wasn't my own creation. That's the thing.
No. I've come up with a few janky things. I mean, my Citadel, you know, I mean, I've been kind of tweaking and playing around with a Sultai Citadel deck. Because I love the Bolas Citadel card. I think that card, it can bust things open. And I think once Mono Red goes away, and once Experimental Frenzy goes away, I could see people trying to jam that somewhere.
That won't work in Standard, because when Experimental Frenzy goes away, so does Bolas' Citadel.
No, Bolas' Citadel was just in this last set.
And Experimental Frenzy was Ravnica. They're all going to rotate together.
Oh, was it Ravnica? I thought, I thought that was Dominaria.
Nope, that was Ravnica.
Oh, never mind then, yeah. So, yeah, right. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I do. I love to play me some good jank. I like to find little stupid interactions. I built a white deck, too, at one point that was life gain last year with a Johnny's Welcome, with a Johnny's Pride Mates. And I think I did. I put the horse in there, too, because the Crested Sunmare was just ridiculous.
Yeah, because why not? I love Crested Sunmare.
But I would even say that God Pharaoh's Gift was a bit of a janky deck, you know.
Well, I mean, it wasn't top of the meta, I guess you could say that. But it was a meta deck. That's the thing.
Right.
But I think for me, like I said, it goes back to the original thing that I'll say is that when I'm playing Magic, it doesn't matter what I'm playing, as long as I'm playing Magic. Really? Yeah, because that's really what it's all about. That's what we're here for. We're not talking about it for our health. We talk about it because we enjoy the game. We love the game, and any chance we get to play is a good night.
It really is. So, Nick, I do want to thank you for listening. You know, tell your friends if you're part of a group, man. You know, and if you want, if it'll help, I'll start saying words like a boot, and I will pick on your. You know, I'm just kidding, but you know, sorry about that.
Oh, jeez. Oh no.
Sorry about that. Sorry, I saw the yoga hosters the other day, so.
Oh, God.
All right, well, you know, before we lose listeners, let's go to Jonathan, our buddy, our first real fan here.
Back on the race.
John, huh? Yep, John wrote in and he said, "Hey, guys, been laying low for a while, but I've heard a few discussions recently about a card and want to see how Aramis thinks it will affect the deck it seems people are targeting with it. Blast Zone. Love that card. Is this card really going to put the damper in Esper like people seem to think it will?" Yes. Lots of discussion going around about it dealing with Teferi and not getting countered. It can't deal with Teferi, though, can it?
Yes, it can.
Blast Zone?
Yes, it can.
Okay. Oh, because it's all permanents with that converted mana cost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a powder keg.
Yeah. With Teferi and not getting countered. Is it the threat everyone thinks, or is it just something else to play around and power through? You know what? And just for poops and giggles, let me pull it up so I can read everybody what exactly the card does. It is a land card. Okay, so it comes in as a land. Blast Zone enters the battlefield with a charge counter on it. It comes in tapped. No, no, it doesn't. Okay, charge counter on it. 2x and tap. Put x charge counters on blast zone. 3 colorless and tap. Sacrifice blast zone. Destroy each non-land permanent with converted mana cost equal to the number of charge counters on blast zone. What's really great in that particular thing is the word proliferate.
Yeah. Well, it's not on the card, but yeah, proliferate's great with that card. Here's what I'll say. I think the short answer is it's just something else to play around, because people have to know how to use it, and I don't think people have quite figured it out yet. Because I've played a few decks that had Blast Zone in it, and yes, it does change how you play a little bit, because if they're sitting with a Blast Zone on 2 or 3, if they're sitting on 2, they can pop your Azcantus. If they're sitting on 3, they can pop your Narsets, your Teferis, your Oath of Kaia's, your Thieves of Sanity after sideboarding, things of that nature. If they pop it up to 4 or 5, you don't care. Because you're only going to have one Teferi on the board at a time. If they want to blow up that card to deal with it, okay, whatever. I at least got a card out of it, untapped a couple of lands, and I likely have another Teferi in my hand at that point.
True. I don't know. I think it is. It's definitely. It depends. You're right. It's definitely better earlier. It's a good board sweeper.
Absolutely.
I have found, and there's a card. Oh, what the hell's the name of that card? It's a blue card that removes all counters.
It's not in War of the Spark.
Yeah, War of the Spark. It removes all the counters. It might not be blue. It might be black.
Well, there's a black card. Yeah, it's Liliana's Betrayal.
Yeah,
it's one, but I don't know if it targets lands.
It says you can remove counters from anything. Oh, hold on. I can look it up. Actually, hold on.
I'm pretty sure it's called Liliana's Betrayal.
But we were talking about it in the chat earlier.
While you're looking that up, yeah. I mean, I think that Blast Zone is a bigger threat for Mono Red and Mono White than it is for Esper Control, because they have more stuff that's on, you know, single mana in their curve. Like, they have a ton of one drops, a ton of two drops, whereas, I mean, Esper doesn't play that many permanents to begin with, and they don't generally care. They're not going to have more than one or two permanents on the board at any one time. So you're really only getting them one for one,
right?
And you're sacrificing a land to do it, which means you're sacrificing mana, which means you keep the mana advantage on the Esper side, which is what they want anyway.
Right.
So it's definitely something that you have to deal with, because, like, you know, it's a land, so it can't be countered, and Esper has no way to deal with it on its own.
Right.
So it's something you have to be aware of. It's not backbreaking by any means, but it is a threat. It is something else you would put in your toolbox to fight Esper. I don't think it's enough.
I don't either. I think it's definitely more for the wider decks, the decks that go wide, like, you know, Bant midrange, or like red or white.
Especially
the one
red.
Thing, the card I was looking for, by the way, it's actually a creature. It's Soul Diviner. It's a blue and a black. It says, remove a counter from an artifact, creature, land, or planeswalker you control, draw a card. So if you bring Blast Zone in and you cast that, okay, during that turn, because it comes in with one counter on it, which is supposed to keep it from removing tokens.
Right.
You come in, you play Soul Diviner, you remove that charge counter from it. Now you can blow up tokens.
Yep.
That
doesn't do much against Esper.
No, it's not going to do much against Esper. Like I said, it's from a white perspective more.
Right.
Like, I was trying to think about it going, God, wouldn't this be great in, like, a white deck that just went super wide? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, no, the tokens don't have a mana cost.
And here's the thing, too, is that a lot of the times when you're popping the Blast Zone, you may be hitting some of your own permanents, which, in that point,
yes,
you're actually doing Esper a favor.
Yep. Because it is an all effect. It is not a opponent's.
Not a one-sided sweep. This kills everything that costs whatever number of counters are on there. So it's, you know, I think if people learn how to play it and they figure out what the best number to keep it at, which I would say is probably 3.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Because if you have to tick it all the way up to 5, you've probably got other problems.
Right. So I definitely agree with that, John. Thanks for writing in, dude. We really appreciate it. You know, you're one of our favorites. But I think at this point, because we're about at the 1 hour mark.
End step.
Dude, this is a good episode. So we're going to go ahead and start picking up our table, getting our cards together, and putting them in these boxes. We just wanted to take some time to let you guys know how to find us through the various interwebs. So, both Aramis and I stream Arena. We actually did Friday night. It was kind of great. On the Planestalker podcast channel on Twitch. Look up Planestalker's podcast there. You can also follow me on Twitch at Mindcrime73.
You can also follow me on Twitch, maybe this weekend at Syracuse, if I happen to get a feature match. Praying for that. That would be awesome. But
well,
otherwise,
you won't be there. You'll have to be on the mat. You'll have to subscribe to Star City Games.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. It's easy enough to find that. But otherwise, I'm at RMechWRX on Twitch. I don't stream very often. If I can ever find the time to do so on a semi-regular basis, I will definitely do that.
Well, you have a kid, dude.
Yeah, I got other things going on besides Magic, so I gotta parcel out my time very carefully. But if Twitter's more your speed, I don't actually have a personal Twitter account, but I do hop onto our Twitter feed, which is at PlanestalkerPod on Twitter, and I'll tweet when new episodes are up, and I'll definitely be tweeting this weekend from Syracuse. Try to post as much as I can, let you guys know how I'm doing. So, wish me luck.
Yes, that would be great. And you can also find me on Twitter. I do have a personal Twitter. It's at WR Benson. And, of course, you can always follow us on Facebook. Just look up Planestalker and like and follow our page, and then you can watch this lovely video on Monday nights.
Yes. Finally, you can send us emails like John and Nick did. Keep up the emails, guys. We really do appreciate it. You can ask for advice in our Ask Aramis section, or you can just ask general questions about the podcast or the game. If you do for the Ask Aramis section, I can offer you tips on anything from deck construction to limited choices. And, you know, if you want to have other suggestions for the show, tell us how we're doing overall. You know, that'd be awesome, too. We love any feedback you guys can give to us. Our email address is podcast@planestalkerspodcast.com.
And don't forget, guys, we are on iTunes. We're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, we're on any place you can hear a podcast, but we'd really love you guys to leave us some iTunes reviews if you're on any of the iOS devices, because it does bring some more visibility to the show. Please go there, rate us 5 stars. If you can't rate us 5 stars, let us know why. But we'd really love to grow the show a little bit more. Share it with your friends, your play group, and all that. But with that, we are going to start backing ourselves out of here. For Aramis Perez, my name is Will Benson. We want to thank you guys. We'll be back next Monday night around 8:30. So tune in then, listen to us, and remember that always leave some of your lands untapped, because you don't want to be manaless. Have a good one. Take care. Have a good week. Bye-bye.